Lord of the universe.
Oh, Lord of the universe.
Soul of the universe.
Soul of the universe.
O personality of the form of the universe.
O personality of the form of the universe.
Please.
Please.
Therefore. Sever my tie of affection.
Sever my tie of affection.
For my kinsmen. The Pandavas and the Rishis.
The Pandavas and the Rishis.
Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Rishis. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Rishis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both the families. Both the families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas, but by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belong to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes. But for the benefit of the mass of population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. Kunti's prayer to cut off the tie of family affection so that she can be fully attached to Krishna sounds like a typical prayer of any pure devotee. However, within the context of Kunti Devi saying it, it's very unusual because she's asking to cut off the tie of affection for the Pandavas and the Rishis, whereas devotees will pray, let me be attached to such great devotees as the Pandavas and the Rishis. If we can develop some attachment for Yudhishthira Maharaj and his brothers, if we can develop attachment for the members of the Vrishni clan, well, Krishna himself says about Uddhava that people are attached to me, I'm attached to my devotees, but I'm attached to you, Uddhava, more than myself or to my devotees. Nacha sankarshano na shriya. How does that verse begin? Natata me priyatama. Natata me priyatama. Atma yone na shankaraha. Nacha sankarshano na shriya. Na shriya naiva atma chayatha vadan. In the course of speaking to Uddhava, Lord Krishna told him that
Certainly Lord Brahma is very dear to me. He's my son. He was born from my very body. And certainly Lord Shiva is very dear to me. He's known as the greatest devotee in this world. And certainly Sankarshan, my brother Balaram, is very dear to me. And certainly Lakshmi Devi, my wife, she's also very dear to me. And I'm also very dear to myself. I like myself also. The whole universe is attracted to me, and I'm also attracted to myself. So these are all very dear to me, but you are more dear to me than all of these together, he told Uddhava. So Uddhava is typical Dwaraka, not typical, he's the best of the Dwaraka Vasis. These are all very dear to Krishna, and we want to, the devotee wants to be dear to Krishna, wants to be dear to his devotees. There's no meaning to being dear to Krishna, not dear to his devotees, or vice versa. Krishna means Krishna with all his devotees. So how is Kunti praying that sever my tie of affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis? How are we to understand this? Can she become more attached to Krishna by becoming less attached to her family members who are such great devotees? Prabhupada gives some clue here in the purport to this mystery that due to affection for the Pandavas and the Rishis, she was caught between the transcendental competition between them. That they both wanted to have Krishna. Krishna was residing with the Yadus and the Vrishnis at Dwaraka. But practically he seemed to spend more time at Indraprastha and later Hastinapur with the Pandavas. And Kunti Devi is related to both. She's related by birth to the Vrishnis, and by marriage, related to the Pandavas, she's their mother, the wife of Pandu. So when a young girl marries, it's understood she becomes part of the new family. She's no longer really part of the, she's no longer part of her birth family. She, her real position is then, her social position is part of the family she marries into. But still, naturally, the affection remains. So there was some transcendental competition between the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, that Krishna should remain with us. No, he should remain with us. So if she was favoring the Pandavas, then the Vrishnis would be deprived. If Krishna is with the Pandavas, then the Vrishnis are deprived, and vice versa. So she was in a dilemma. So she was praying to Krishna that you sever my tie, let my affection for you be purely for your pleasure. Let me not be caught in trying to favor one party over the other. Now another consideration here is that the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, the Leela of the Lord, that has this, when is that's enacted in this material world, it has some, there's no tinge of mundane feelings, but there is the semblance of it. It may appear to be like that. The Pandavas, it may appear that they were not pure devotees. And why are they so attached to getting a kingdom and getting their kingdom back? Why they could have just chanted Hare Krishna. Why are they so attached to getting their kingdom back? But everything has to be understood from the vantage point of what is Krishna's leela. Kunti Devi says that your pastimes appear to be human-like, and chikirshitam tevehamalasyanyanam vidambanam. They appear to be human-like and therefore they are bewildering. It looks as if Krishna is partial to the Pandavas. that he's unnecessarily favoring them over the Kauravas. It appears that Krishna, he made certain tricks to favor the Pandavas and put the Pandavas in position. So if we see from the mundane point of view, it looks like Krishna's partial, but he declares himself that samoham sarva bhuteshu, I'm equal to all. That means he's equal to Duryodhana as he is to Yudhishthira. It doesn't appear to be like that. Name dvesho stina priyaha, I don't see anyone as my enemy, and I don't have any particular partiality to anyone. But it doesn't seem to be like that. It seems that he's partial to the Pandavas, and he's chastising Duryodhana that you're simply a rascal. Why is that? How then can Krishna claim that I am equal to all? I don't see anyone as my dear or anyone as my enemy. That he explains himself, eva janti jamam bhakta maite tesha chapyaham. But if anyone approaches me in devotion, I reciprocate with them. Now how this samoham sarva bhuteshu, I'm equal to all, then how does this balance with Krishna's other statement, ye yatam maam prapadyante tansa taiva bhajami aham? How can these, Krishna, he reciprocates according to how we approach him. That means that Krishna is willing to reciprocate. If Duryodhana had taken the same mood as Yudhishthira, then Krishna would have reciprocated with him thus. But because he didn't, because he acted as an enemy of Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira was a very dear devotee of Krishna, because Duryodhana took that role of being against Krishna, against Yudhishthira, then Krishna reciprocated. He wasn't blindly reciprocating with Yudhishthira against Duryodhana. He gave Duryodhana a chance also. He told him many times that why you're behaving in a wrong manner, you shouldn't do like this. But Duryodhana always took it as partiality. He said, well, we didn't do anything wrong. Yudhishthira agreed to the game of dice. That it was a cheating game and that they took the kingdom by cheating. He said, well, you know, he agreed to it. He never saw that I did anything wrong. He said, I'm right. Whatever I did was right. That we're kings and we take kingdoms by our own, by our different means, and I'm on the throne, and why should I give anything to Yudhishthira? So Krishna reciprocated with him. Anyone who Krishna says, I'm equal to all, I have no particular enemy or friend, but if anyone approaches me in devotion, then I reciprocate accordingly. So actually, he, in one sense, Krishna is neutral. In another sense, he's also partial. He is partial to his devotees. But he doesn't say that only certain people can meet my devotees. It's not like you have to be born a Jew and then you can, the special chosen race, or one has to be born in a Brahmana caste. There's no such thing. Krishna gives equal opportunity to everybody, but some choose to be his devotees, and some choose to be his, what they consider to be enemy. Krishna doesn't consider them an enemy. That is proven because Krishna, when he kills, Krishna's killing Putana, Baka, Agha, so it means he's against them, but no, because he gives them the same opportunity as his devotees. In other words, he liberates those who he kills, and thus shows that he is, actually he loves everybody. But it is necessary to behave with rascals in such a manner that they cannot expand their devilish influence more and more. Otherwise Krishna is equal to all. But his pastimes, for the sake of them, how can they be lila? That I was discussing this morning, how Krishna appears to be like one of us. Otherwise, if Krishna, if he shows himself as Vishvesha, Vishvatma, Vishvamurti, if he's always like that, then how is there any lila? If everyone's just all the time getting up and falling down on the ground, offering obeisances and offering prayers, now how's Krishna going to drink his mother's milk? How can he do? How can he have that reciprocation? If Yashoda Mahi, before she feeds him milk, she offers obeisances to him, then Krishna won't be very happy. If she chastises him, he'll be more happy, because he likes that. The relationship that she is superior, he likes that. Kunti Devi is not as fortunate as Yashoda Mahi. She recognizes that. That she finds it very difficult to understand how Yashoda Mahi can feed Krishna. But she recognizes her relationship with Krishna is more intimate. Because I know that you're my nephew, and I reciprocate with you like this, and I'll give you my blessings, but at the same time I know that you are Vishvesha, Vishvatma, Vishvamurti. So Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he comes and his pastimes appear to be human-like, and it appears that Krishna has to arrange some different circumstances so the Pandavas can be successful. So it appears that in playing their role, it appears that the Pandavas, it appears that Yudhishthira is a pious person of this material world. He said, I want to get my kingdom back. I need to have at least one village, because otherwise how can I perform my Kshatriya Dharma? A Kshatriya, he has to be a ruler of something, even if it's one village. So it would appear that Yudhishthira Maharaj was simply interested in worldly dharma, but actually he wanted to execute all his duties for the satisfaction of Krishna. But it appears as if simply interested in worldly dharma. But Yudhishthira Maharaj had understood the principle that dharma is to be executed for the satisfaction of Krishna. That is the actual meaning of dharma, and that is the topmost level of dharma. What is that verse? How does that begin? Varnashrama vibhagashaha. How does that verse begin? No. Atapamdhya dvijasreshta vanashrama vibhagashaha svanushtitasya dharmasya samsidhya haritoshanam. So Yudhishthira Maharaj had understood this principle, that as a king, he had a duty to do, to rule over the world, but specifically for upholding the Varnashram institution. Why? So that by performance of their duties in the Varnashram system, people could come to the perfection of the Varnashram system, which is to perform all their activities for the satisfaction of Lord Hari. So it may appear that this is almost, the Varnashram system, we can say, it is more or less mundane, but then if the purpose is there, Sangsidhya Haritoshanam, or if everything is done for the satisfaction of Vishnu, then the Varnashram system becomes, it's a bridge or an interface by which people can perform their worldly duties in a manner that brings them to the spiritual platform of satisfying Lord Hari. So, Kunti Devi also, there's another aspect of Leela, that the devotees, they may think even of their spiritual relationships, they may think of it that, oh, I'm attached to my family. This is an obstacle to worshipping Krishna. Now, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, they're all great devotees, but if one is thinking of them in mundane terms, if one is thinking I'm mundanely attached to them, it can be an obstacle also. Even affection for a pure devotee, if it's the wrong kind of affection, it can be an obstacle in our devotional service. That doesn't seem to make any sense, so I'll explain that. If one is mundanely attached to a pure devotee, then that can be an obstacle to one's devotion. Just like Prabhupada's family members, they thought, well, he's our father. And then after Prabhupada left this world, one of his sons made a court case that the ISKCON was a business started by my father, so it should all come to me. He made a court case, and it was accepted in the court, and he wanted to take all the property. He's saying, it's my father, it should come to me. Why should it come to anyone else? And he was challenging that actually Prabhupada wasn't a sannyasi, and so many, I don't know how they can even admit such cases in the court, but it went on for some time. Similarly, we find that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, generally it's stated that he is the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but he never considered himself that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is my father. He never considered any worldly relationship. And he said that anyone who thinks of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Baba, as father, Bengali word Baba for father, then if they think like that, then that will become a badha, an obstacle. If we think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Baba, that will become a badha, an obstacle in our worship of Radha. Badha, Radha, these are similar words. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't come to this world to produce sons. We give his name in a dynasty, the Datta dynasty. But that is not his actual identity. To consider Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a member of the Hatkola Datta Kayasta Vamsha, that is a misunderstanding, because he is directly a representative of Srimati Radharani. His actual identity is in the inner circle of the maidservants of Radha. So if we think of him as some product of flesh and blood, then that becomes Gurushu Mahatabuddhi, or Vaishnava. Gurushu Naramatya, Vaishnava. Martya Buddha, to think of a Vaishnava as some person who is born and dies, or to think of Guru as a human being, it is a misunderstanding. And not only a misunderstanding, serious misunderstanding, Naraki Vaisaha. Such a person is possessed of hellish intelligence. So material attachment to a pure devotee, it's material, it's not spiritual. One may think that, well, the sons of Prabhupada, they're very fortunate. In one sense, very fortunate, but very unfortunate, because they didn't appreciate actually who is Prabhupada. They just thought he's the person who provides us rice and dal. That's his job. He's the person who, his job is to come and give us money and we shall enjoy rice and dal and biscuits. So they don't understand what is Prabhupada's position. They misunderstand. Actually, they become more unfortunate. They could be the most fortunate by having association with him, but they didn't appreciate it. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, from the very beginning, he never showed any sign of being anything like any mundane person. From the very beginning of his life, he appreciated who is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was able to take advantage of his gifts. So, how to see who is a great devotee? We may see in a mundane way. We may say that, well, this person, he's also eating, sleeping, and passing stool, brushing his teeth, sometimes gets sick. But we are advised not to see devotees like that. In what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur termed Vaishnavochit Bhasha, or the proper way of speaking for a Vaishnava, we don't say that, well, Prabhupada got sick. We wouldn't say that. We speak like that in English. That's become, or even English or even Bengali or whatever. We may say like that. Prabhupada oshushto hobe. Prabhupada was sick. The same Bengali. But the proper way of saying is that he was exhibiting the pastime of being, of apparently being sick. You may say, well, that's a very long way to say it. But it's necessary to say like that in order to distinguish the apparently worldly activities of pure devotees. A Vaishnava doesn't get sick because he doesn't have a material body. You say, well, that's just sentiment. You see, he gets sick. Even Prabhupada went to the hospital, had an operation in England in August 1977. Had an operation, his urine wasn't flowing, so the doctor cut some skin and then it was flowing. But even we're advised not even to discuss this kind of thing very much, because the tendency is there that matya buddhi will think, oh, he's an ordinary person like us, he's subject to the three modes of material nature. So generally we don't even discuss very much about these intimate bodily details of the pure devotees, because the tendency then is to become bewildered and think, well, they're like us. But no, we should understand that everything the great pure devotees do and say, that is not under the jurisdiction of three modes of material nature. So, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivam prakriti maashritaha. The pure devotees are always under the internal energy of the Supreme Lord. They're not conducted by the three modes of material nature. So how is that? They're acting in so many ways, acting like an ordinary person. Their bodies are also made of blood and flesh. But we're advised not to think like that. That it may appear that they're acting under the internal energy, external energy. But everything they do, it may be that they're interacting with the external energy, but that is, what they are doing is directed by the internal energy. Even Krishna comes here to this world, and it appears that he's interacting with the external energy. You can see the places he went, he traveled, when he was going from Dwarka to Hastinapur. So he traveled, and then he went through so many places. Actually, any place that Krishna goes to, that becomes fully transcendental. But he was interacting with so many different people. Duryodhana also spoke to Krishna. Duryodhana is fully under the control of the external energy of Krishna. Then how is it he could even see Krishna? Krishna cannot be seen by materialistic people. He didn't see Krishna. He did. He saw Krishna. He even saw Krishna's universal form, which is manifested. Krishna, when Duryodhana, he wanted to, he hatched a plan. Krishna's coming for peace. He wants to sue for peace. We're not going to accept peace. What we shall do, we shall capture Krishna and imprison him. Then the Pandavas and the Rishis, they'll be broken-hearted and they won't be able to do anything. So this was his plan. He worked, very good plan he worked out with Karna and Shakuni and Dushasana and all these other rascals. So they gave Krishna, they came to where they offered Krishna a place to stay. Krishna, I don't stay at any place that you give me. He's touched on his impartiality. So they came to where Krishna was staying with Vidura, and then they had, now we'll catch him. So Krishna showed his universal form. You're going to capture me? You want to put me in a prison? You have to put the whole universe in prison. You're not capable of catching me. But he didn't say, and he said that Krishna told that, look, I'm on the Pandava side. You can't be successful. Even myself against all your forces 10 times over, there's no question that you can even make 1 inch of progress on the battlefield. Whatever little progress you make, that's only because I allow you. Just like a cat with a mouse allows the mouse to play. But otherwise, you can't do anything to me. But Duryodhan, being possessed of wicked mentality, though, there's just some mystic trick he's showing. Some yogi's trick. So Duryodhana saw Krishna, but did he see Krishna? In one sense you can say yes. Just like the materialist can see the deity of Krishna. But can they see Krishna? No, they cannot. They cannot actually see Krishna. Nato na tyadharo yata. Krishna is just like an actor on a stage, so people may see him, but they don't actually understand who he is. Maya javanika channam. He's covered, but he's there, he's seen, but there is the curtain of maya by which they see. Pashanapi na pashyati. They see Krishna, but they don't actually see him. How is that they're seeing? But they don't understand who he is. They don't accept who he is. So even though Duryodhana, he sees Krishna, but he doesn't see with premandana charita bhakti vilocha. Rather, he sees with prema or isha. It's premanjana, which he sees with irshanjana. He sees with the salve of hatred and dislike, and not with bhakti vilochan, but with the not with the eyes of bhakti, but with the eyes of abhakti, of non-devotion. So he sees Krishna, but instead of seeing Krishna as Vishvesha, Vishvarna, Vishvamurti, instead of seeing him as Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, instead of seeing him like, this is my enemy, I have to kill him. So he sees Krishna, but his seeing is seeing through the eye of agyan, seeing through the eye of ignorance. So actually Krishna can be seen through the eye of knowledge by understanding who Krishna is. Then we can actually understand. Then we can actually see Krishna. People ask, can you show me God? Yes, but first you have to take training. Otherwise you cannot see. Without training, you cannot. You will see, but you won't be able to understand, which is as good as not seeing. Can you show me DNA molecules? It can show you, but you won't understand it. You have to take training. Then you can understand what it is. Otherwise you're seeing it, it doesn't mean anything to you. You'll just see. What will you see? Your ability to see is hampered by your ignorance. So yes, we can show you DNA. Can you prove DNA molecules exist? Show them to me. You can show, but I don't see the DNA molecules. Of course you don't, you fool, because you don't know what they are. You have to take training, then only you can understand. You say, how do I know it's DNA molecule? Then you have to come and study. We can show you, show me God. Yeah, this is Krishna. Well, I don't see God. Of course you don't, because you don't have any idea what God is. So how are you going to see? So, Krishna can be seen, can be understood, can be loved. Krishna should be seen, should be understood, should be loved. But not by any material process. What to speak of Krishna, we cannot even see his devotees unless we see with the proper attitude. This Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his, one helper, we can, someone who helped him a lot in his activities, especially in establishing the Mayapur as the appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instead of the present town of Navadvipa. Someone who is very helpful in that activity is this one prominent zamindar of Nadia district, Nafa Chandra Pal. So after the disappearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he visited Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at the Gauriya Math in Calcutta. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking against this Leela Kirtan, that we should, this singing of very high Leelas of Krishna. He was talking against that. This is not meant for everyone in the public. This is, he was saying this is simply farcical, the way it's going on. Then Nathapal, he gave an objection, but he said that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the first temple at the Jogpeet, at the appearance place of Mahaprabhu, that he called a Leela Kirtan party of the same kind that you are criticizing, he called them to perform there. So how are you talking against this? And Bhaktisthan Sasar Thakur said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur never arranged, he never approved of any such thing, he never arranged such a thing. But Nathapal said that you were there also, and you saw it, and how can you say? We all saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktisthan Sasar Thakur said, you have never seen Bhaktivinoda Thakur. How can you say? I mean, so many times you saw me with him. It's well known that he made me the first secretary of the Navadvip Dham Pracharini Sabha. And you're saying I never saw him. It doesn't make any sense. What are you saying? So many times you saw him with me together. I said, actually, you never saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur cannot be seen simply by some eyes made of flesh and blood. Such eyes are not capable of seeing him. You saw what you thought was Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but you never saw him actually. He can be seen by someone who is on the same platform as him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it may have seemed that he mixed up with so many people, even with so many sahajiyas. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explained that at that time to establish the true mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which had been taken over by the Sahajiyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur apparently made some friendship with them, although actually he had nothing to do with them. His true spiritual identity, which is actually his only identity, he has nothing to do with anyone except who is a pure devotee of Krishna. But for his preaching activities, he may have extended himself in the world in various ways. But people who thought that Kedarnath Datta, Bhaktivinoda, he has made a great contribution to Bengali literature, for instance, then they kind of understand. He has nothing to do with Bengali literature. He's only the only thing he has to do is to praise the Supreme Lord. His literature is not Bengali literature. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, they also, when they the people would say that, oh, your Bengali is very different. He said, I'm not speaking Bengali. I never speak Bengali. All the time you speak Bengali. That what you consider Bengali is some combinations of sounds for interacting with other worldly sense enjoyers. I do not speak that language. He doesn't speak any language of this world. What language he is speaking, that is impelled by the antaranga shakti, by the internal potency of the Lord, that has nothing to do with this mundane ka ka ga ga that people learn. Nothing to do with it. What he is speaking is only for the glorification of the Supreme Lord. It's got nothing to do with, you can study the history of the Bengali language, it has nothing to do with any such thing. Even Sanskrit, well, they're not speaking Sanskrit. Language is what he's speaking is only for glorification of the Supreme Lord. It may have some semblance to this worldly language, but actually, what the pure devotees speak and how they act, and it has nothing to do with this material world, nothing whatsoever. This material world means Krishna Bahirmukh, looking away from Krishna. And Krishna consciousness is Krishnonmukh, looking towards Krishna, or more specifically, Krishna Sevonmukh. So that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, I'm not speaking Bengali. Ordinary Bengali means what is spoken, how to forget Krishna. Even the so-called Leela Kirtan is how to forget Krishna. Because they're not actually glorifying Krishna. They're thinking Krishna is an object of our sense enjoyment. We shall like to hear how he is enjoying, and we shall also enjoy in the same way. So it's actually in the name of kirtan, it's upper kirtan, or the opposite of kirtan. Because it appears to be kirtan, but it's not meant for the glorification of Krishna. It's meant for the glorification of our own sensual enjoyment. So actually the real spiritual language, that is sevamukh. Spiritual activities mean sevamukh. What is the difference between Prabhupada printing books and anyone else printing books? That Prabhupada's printing books is only for the glorification of Krishna. It may appear the same thing. What is the price? What is the quality? How will we get the best deal? It may appear dealing like a businessman. But Prabhupada's activities, they have nothing to do with this material world. This material world, yoga chityati jagat, this world means what's moving on, what is always moving, that is this material world. And spiritual existence means sthita pragya, fixed in consciousness. So this material world is moving on only for the sense gratification. Manashastani indrani, how does that go? Prakriti sthani karshati. This whole material world is moving on because of our concocted mental desires to enjoy this material world. So the activities of pure devotees, they are absolutely different from those of non-devotees. Absolute, that means, absolute means completely different in quality. What a pure devotee does, says, thinks, it has no semblance whatsoever. Only an external semblance. That's shadow. The activity of the non-devotees is simply a shadow or a perverted reflection of those of pure devotees. But due to their two-dimensional vision, they cannot see the depth of the pure devotees' activities of love of Krishna. So this prayers of Kunti Devi, we are reading them to clarify so that we can better understand who is Krishna, so that we can begin to approach Krishna also. But we shouldn't think that we read one time and then we understood. Because when we come again, we'll find there's more depth. It's not that we're coming from two dimensions to three dimensions. We're coming from two dimensions to unlimited dimensions. Krishna Lila is not three-dimensional. It's called Turiya, which means on the fourth platform. But the fourth dimension is the fifth, sixth, there's unlimited dimensions. How deep are the loving relationships of Krishna with his devotees? Whereas material relationships, they're two-dimensional, flat, no depth, only on the surface. There's nothing behind it. It only looks as if there's something. There's only some lines, that's all. There's no actual depth of feeling. So this Bhagavatam, when we can go through again and again, first time we think, now it's more clear. I understood something about Krishna's pastimes, Kunti Deva has explained. Then we come back again, we find, oh, what I thought was clear, that's not clear, because now we have to understand there's more depth. We thought we understood, but actually there's more depth to it. And then you have to go again and again. And then eventually you give up. It's impossible to understand. We cannot fully understand. Give up doesn't mean we become Mayavadis. That means that we jump into the ocean of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we give up trying to understand Krishna, then we can go to Krishna's Lila. As long as we're trying to measure Krishna, that's Maya. Mapiyate iti Maya. One definition of Maya means to try to measure. How big is Krishna? Put Krishna. We have a box, we'll put Krishna inside, seal it up. I understood. I got my Bhakti Shastri degree. I put a hat on my head. Bhakti Shastri degree. Now I understand. Now you see, I got Bhakti Shastri degree, I understood. When we understand that we cannot understand Krishna, then we should get a Bhakti Shastri degree. And go on trying to understand, because trying to understand is very sweet. We can appreciate more how wonderful is Krishna. By understanding how wonderful is Krishna, we can try to understand. The more we try to understand, the more we can understand it's impossible to understand. And we go deeper and deeper into understanding Krishna. How great is Krishna? He is Vishva, Vishvesha, Vishvatma, Vishvamurti, but yet he's Kunti Devi, he's the Kunti Devi's nephew. How is that possible? He's the Lord of the whole universe, and Kunti Devi is telling him that, and she's also addressing him as my nephew. Now, how is that possible? How can anyone be the mother or father or aunt of the source of the whole universe? It's only possible by his mercy. It's only possible by his mercy to enter into such a kind of relationship with him. It's only by his mercy that we can begin to understand him, because we can't understand him through English or Bengali or Sanskrit or Kannada or Hindi or any language of this world. Even, I was saying, Sanskrit. You may say it's a spiritual language, Shastras in Sanskrit, but according to our mentality, that will be material. There are plenty of materialists who are expert in Sanskrit, most of them. It's not that by learning Sanskrit one becomes spiritual. One cannot know even one word of Sanskrit and be a pure devotee of Krishna. And one can be a great Sanskrit pundit and be further away from Krishna than the ordinary. Mostly they are. They're further away from Krishna. Because they think, by my Sanskrit scholarship, I put Krishna, and now I understand Krishna. They can tell you what is the meaning of the name and different grammatical roots. And by all their discussion of Krishna, they go further and further away from Krishna by thinking that they've understood. So Krishna can only be understood by spiritual language. How are we going to understand that spiritual language? How will we speak it? How will we begin to converse if you don't know a language? Then that's possible by the mercy of the Lord. That mercy comes by association with his devotees. By association with his devotees, they imbue others with the mood, seva mukh, the mood of desire to serve Krishna, by which Krishna becomes revealed. Atashi Krishna Nama Li Nabhaved Grahim Indra. What's the next word? Seva mukhe hi jivado swayameva spirati radha. And what do you speak of understanding? You take one word, this word he in this verse, you can discuss it for 10 years. Sevam mukhe hi jivado swayameva spirati radha. Krishna reveals himself to those who are sevam mukhe. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recommended that you take this verse, put it in a frame and look at it while you're chanting. Because sevam mukhe hi jivado. What is this chant? Sevam mukhe, this chanting coming from the tongue. Which kind of tongue can vibrate the holy name of the Lord? Sevam mukhe tongue can vibrate. Otherwise Duryodhana was also saying the name of Krishna, but the name of Krishna never appeared on the tongue of Duryodhana. He would say Krishna. But that Krishna that he was saying, that Krishna is not Parthasarathi Krishna. That Krishna was the Krishna he conceived of as his enemy. His tongue was not Sevan Mukh. So by Duryodhana saying the name of Krishna, he will never become purified. He will never understand Krishna Nama Adi. It's not possible, because his attitude is just the opposite of Sevan Mukh. So why are you coming to hear these Bhagavad Katha? We're coming. Why are we here? We think, heard all this. I had my Bhakti Shastri because I didn't come and study. I don't have to come and hear a class anymore. I already did that. You see, when you go to school, and if you're lucky, they teach you 2 plus 2 equals 4 and 2 times 2 equals 4. And then you don't come back 20 years later and do it again. You don't have a refresher course. You learn it and that's it. Finish. Then why are we again and again hearing these verses? Some of you are chanting. You know, you remember the verse. And why do we have to listen again and again? Because we're damn fool rascals, that's right. And we don't have an attitude of Seva Mukta to Krishna. And I'm the biggest fool and rascal, because I'm making a big show of talking all these things. We don't have this attitude. Even in bhakti, we come and do bhakti and we think, oh, how everyone will appreciate me. Just the opposite. Instead of thinking how what I do will be appreciable by Krishna and his devotees, we're thinking the others should praise me now. This attitude of Krishna Bahimukh is so deeply rooted that even in our supposed bhakti, then we take it as a chance for our own sense gratification. Such foolishness I have. So we have to hear Chindhi, the cutting, this Kunti Devi wants her affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishni, that her apparently material affection, which she doesn't have, but it's Leela of thinking, right? She wants that cut. So early in the Bhagavatam, we hear this word also, this Chidyate Bhidya Grantis. No, what is it? Chidyante Sarva Samshayaha. Vidyate Hridaya Grantis. Chidyante Sarva Samshayaha. So these cuts, we have to, the knot on the heart has to be, and the doubts have to be all cut. So we hear this again and again, just so that we can, all this hearing is so that we can attain this mood of fixed up sevamukh, the desire to actually serve Krishna, from which everything else comes. That's the only, what is the secret of Krishna consciousness? The secret of Krishna consciousness is Krishna consciousness, to be Krishna conscious. Anukul. Anukul yena Krishna anushinam. Anukul yena Krishna anushinam. What is that anukul? What is the essence of that favorable mood for bhakti? That means sevan mukata, the desire to serve Krishna. Therefore, one name for Radharani is also Anukula. Why is she praised so much? Because Radha, Anaya Radhita Nunam, Ishvaro, Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi. She worships him the best. So what is that worship? Ringing a bell? Yeah, that also. But because her whole being is Krishna, only service to Krishna. Everything, service to Krishna. So, Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam means to take shelter of Radharani, not by running around Govardhan saying, may gopi hum, and imitating, as some people do, before they go back to Delhi and switch on their TVs again. But actually taking shelter of Radharani, Daivin Prakriti Mashitaha, that means to imbibe from her the mood of service. Not that we can approach her personally, but by becoming dasanu 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 gopi bhartuhu pada kamaliyo dasu dasanu dasanu. By becoming, if we can assist someone who is assisting 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 someone in bringing a pot of water for Radharani to bathe Krishna, that will be the perfection. So we have to see, we are here, what's going on up there? What is our link? We have a link. It's called parampara. Now we can serve someone who's serving someone who's serving someone, and then up there, they're dancing with Krishna. And we can also go there to dance with Krishna if we want to serve Krishna. Not that we'll say to Krishna, oh, you dance to my tune. We have to dance to Krishna's tune. So that's what we learn, that's what we come to learn when we come to hear these classes. Hare Krishna. Is there any question or comment or protest? Please. Do we have a... Yeah, we have this.
In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Devahuti tells that association with a pure devotee is cheap. She tells, she means Kardama Muni, is purifying even when it is performed Inamoto says justification is the verse. So how to understand what she means by that, relating to what you have told in previously in class. That
well, first you have to understand what association means, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, you never saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So in the case of Devahuti and Kadhanov, it may appear as this, as if there was devotional service overlaid with some tinge of desire for sense gratification. But the I don't know how to say it in English, the mool swabhav, or the basic attitude, we could say, was that they came together for the service of the Lord. And we cannot say there was any desire for sense gratification in them, but it may have appeared like that, even to themselves. But this is the difference between sincerity and insincerity, actually. They're very important words. Kapat akapat. What is our basic attitude? The sons of Prabhupada, they didn't see that he's a great pure devotee, and they had some overlay of thinking that he's also our father. They didn't see like that. They saw he's our father, and why is he wasting his time with his bhakti? So they didn't associate with him, actually. They didn't. Association means to get on the same wavelength. But they were, they had no actual, they didn't contact proper. They had contact with what they saw as Abhay Charande. They didn't have any contact with Abhay Charanaravinda Das, later A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. They didn't have contact, they didn't want to have contact. In the case of Nafa Chandrapal, I don't know exactly, because I don't know enough about him. But many people may have supported Bhaktivinoda Thakur as he himself, you could say in some senses he came down to the level. So they may have thought that, yes, we're doing great service for Bengali culture by promoting Vaishnavism, or we're doing something to revive the glories of the great Bengali saint, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So with such an attitude, they couldn't actually understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even though he engaged them in helping him. It all depends on the attitude. Association with devotees doesn't necessarily mean living in the same room as them. It doesn't necessarily mean even hearing. We don't actually begin to hear unless that vidyate hridya granthihi. Unless we allow the words from the sadhus to enter our ears and enter our hearts, then we don't actually hear. That's how the parampara becomes spoiled, because people, they hear, but it enters the ear, and then it enters the mind, and then it gets messed up. Instead of entering the ear and to the heart, there's no change of heart. Only the mind receives some information, the wicked mind, which then alters that information for his own sense gratificatory purposes. Then it doesn't go anywhere near the heart. One can associate with devotees on heart-to-heart platform, not on mind-to-mind platform. Because for the devotees, there's no difference between the mind and the heart. Anya hridai man, mora man vrindavan. Normal people's mind and heart is different. They say one thing, but in their heart they have some other desire. But for the pure devotees, their mind and their heart are one, because they're always living in Vrindavan, and their mind is there, and their heart is there also. So there may be some overlay of sense gratification. Practically we can say Prabhupada tricked so many people into taking devotional service by offering them prasadam as something enjoyable for the tongue, although prasad is worshipable, it's enjoyable for Krishna's tongue. But Prabhupada, he brought them in, we can say, by a highly hedonistic society, offered them, this is more fun. Shri Krishna consciousness is not meant for our own pleasure, and as long as we're thinking it's for our own pleasure, we can't actually become Krishna conscious. But Prabhupada was able to bring people in. He had wonderful prasadam, and enjoy, come, you like music? Come, try this out, try this music. But then, you want to know more, then sit down, listen. Prabhupada would give lectures. And in his lectures, there was no... It was straightforward that we are servants of Krishna, we have to surrender to Krishna. And then again, okay, 2 hours listening to the Swami, okay, bring out the gulab jamuns, quick. But Prabhupada's purpose was not to make people into enjoyers of prasadam, but to be enjoyed by Krishna. Think about that with your transcendental intelligence. Maybe you can tell more about it later. Many times there are so many topics, then in course of time Krishna will reveal. Not everything can be understood at once, and everything cannot be understood at any point in time. Then, anything else? Please give them cordless mic over there. Just one other point, that one may be benefited by association with devotees, even with an attitude of sense gratification, but the real association doesn't begin until that overlay of sense gratification is out. And if we think that therefore I can maintain an attitude of sense gratification, then we'll always remain, we won't have very close association, we'll always remain separated from them actually. The mood of sense gratification is that which separates us from Krishna.
Maharaj, you were mentioning about the fourth dimension, Surya, and also you mentioned about two dimension.
About what was the other thing, sorry?
We see things on two dimensions. Surya state, you were mentioning on the fourth dimension. If the two dimension is speaking only on the Jagrati and Sushupti.
No, with these eyes we see three dimensions, but I was giving that as an example. I was giving that as an example, just like people, if they see only in two dimensions, they cannot imagine what is depth. So in the same way, we may see Krishna's pastimes at a certain level, but we don't see the depth of that. So it's as if we're seeing, but our ability to understand is very much limited because we didn't enter into the broader dimension of the world of service. And then if we don't enter the world of service, the world of bhakti, then we'll see Krishna as part of this world. And we'll ascribe his motives to materialistic motives like us. And we'll see Krishna as someone to be... A materialist, just like a devotee sees everything in the world to be engaged in Krishna's service and everything in relationship with Krishna. And a non-devotee sees everything in the world should be engaged for my sense gratification, and everything in this world is in relationship to me. So, a materialistic person sees Krishna and his pastimes as something for my enjoyment, or he may see something, the materialist sees friends and enemies. Friends are those who help my sense gratification, and enemies are those who obstruct my sense gratification. So if Krishna is an obstruction in my sense gratification, then he's my enemy. Like Duryodhana was trying to take this nice food, take this nice palace. And Krishna wasn't interested. He said, you want to get my friendship for your own personal ends. I won't accept this because your attitude is not devotional. So that two-dimensional vision I was giving as an example, that we cannot see Krishna. We think we see Krishna, but we maybe we can say seeing, but very shallow. We don't actually see Krishna as he is if we're thinking how to enjoy Krishna.